On Beacon Hill, legislative leaders have crafted a plan to close a $750 million revenue gap in the next state budget. There's been some last-minute budget cutting, but House Ways and Means Committee Chair Brian Dempsey says he's confident the budget plan that goes to the House and the Senate for a final vote today is responsible.
We're not waiting and seeing. We're not wishing and hoping. We're not keeping our fingers crossed. We're saying, look, it doesn't look like we're going to hit this. Let's solve it today. Let's cut. Let's make sure that we're spending at an appropriate level. Let's make sure we're being fiscally responsible.
After dealing with the budget, lawmakers are preparing for a few busy weeks ahead, dealing with other key issues before formal sessions for this year wrap up at the end of July. Following this final flurry of events is WBUR State House reporter Steve Brown, who joins us in the studio. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Bob.
So before we get to the outstanding legislation that lawmakers need to deal with in the last few weeks, tell us about some of the situations making the legislative wrap-up especially challenging this year.
Well, the biggest thing are the national conventions that are coming up. In years past, in 2008 and 2012, the DNC and the RNC have held their presidential nominating conventions in August and September. This year, they're front-loading it. They're holding them in July, and July is always the busy month as the legislature wraps up their things. They have to be done by July 31st. So with those 2 weeks taken out, it means that the legislative leaders have had to do some juggling of schedules. They're going to be having a lot of formal sessions early on, and then look for them to be coming back at the last weekend in July. Also slowing things down up on the State House have been tensions between the House and the Senate. The Senate has felt that some of the joint committees, which are controlled mostly by House members, because there are more House members than Senate members on those committees, have been sitting on pieces of legislation that the Senate would have liked to have acted upon. And so that's created some tension there, and sometimes that gets in the way of things.
All right, now the budget. Work on the state budget became more complicated in recent weeks. Remind us why.
Well, the House and the Senate passed their versions of the budget back in April and May based on revenue projections at that time. Then in early June, there was a downturn in revenues that was first estimated at $450 to $750 million. And just this week, the governor said that it would be more like $650 to $950 million. So the conferees had to scramble to make up the difference. There's a drop in capital gains that's being blamed on this downturn. The governor and the legislative leaders say the state economy is still doing well. It's those capital gains that they didn't anticipate the drop. So that's why they had to deal with the revenues.
Tell us about the compromise budget getting an up or down vote in the House and Senate today on Beacon Hill.
That's right. They can only accept it or reject it, and I'm 99% sure they will accept that today. They trimmed $413 million in spending. They did that through efficiencies, buying smarter. They're deferring some Medicaid payments. They're going to trim Mass Health by revising estimates on how many people will be seeking health care in the new year. They've cut some money for sheriffs, and they're not going to put the $200 million in the stabilization fund, the state's rainy day fund that they thought they would do.
There are a few areas, though, that are going to enjoy, if that's the correct word, spending increases.
Yes, they're going to increase aid to public schools in Massachusetts by $116 million over last year. Direct aid to cities and towns, another $42 million, is a 1% increase for higher education, and they say there's adequate additional spending for dealing with the state's opioid crisis.
So assuming they get the budget out of the way today, what bills are close to final passage beyond the budget bill?
Some are very close. The transgender public accommodations bill, they had a conference committee meeting yesterday, and indications are they'll have another meeting probably next week, and that bill will be kicked out and will be passed by the legislature. Also getting closer is the so-called Uber bill, transportation network companies. The Senate yesterday approved their version. Again, that's going to be heading towards a conference committee. It'll be up to six legislators to iron out the differences, so that could pass as well. And also the energy bill, the Senate is taking up their version of the energy bill today. The House passed theirs a while back. And so that should be making it to the governor's desk, if they pass it, by the next couple of weeks.
Backloading important stuff to the end of the legislative session. WBUR's Steve Brown keeping track of it all. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Bob.
Once again, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh finds himself responding to questions about alleged corruption in his administration. This after a second City Hall worker was indicted on extortion charges related to alleged efforts to persuade organizers of a major music festival to employ union workers. The indictment charges Boston Intergovernment Relations Director Timothy Sullivan of conspiring with a previously indicted City Tourism Director to make sure that union workers were hired. WBUR's Bruce Gellerman has our story.
Timothy Sullivan entered the court in handcuffs, bit his lip as the cuffs were unlocked, and leafed through the 9-page indictment against him. Quietly and quickly, he answered questions put to him by Judge Magistrate Donald Cabell. Did he understand the charges against him? Understand, said Sullivan. Did you know you have the right to keep silent and have an attorney? I do, Sullivan replied, and the initial appearance in federal court was over in a few minutes. Sullivan was released under an unsecured $25,000 bond. He was told to turn over his passport and not talk to anyone who might be involved in his case. Afterwards, Sullivan's attorney, William Santolo, spoke with reporters.
Not only does he not think he did anything wrong, I don't think he did anything wrong. This is a very, very strange case.
The two-count indictment alleges Sullivan repeatedly threatened to withhold city permits for a music festival on City Hall Plaza in 2014 if producers refused to hire union stagehands. The superseding indictment includes an additional conspiracy count to charges brought last month against Kenneth Brissett, Boston's director of tourism. The indictments allege Sullivan and Brissett colluded to extort the festival's producer. Sullivan's defense attorney, William Santolo, had strong words for the federal prosecutors, saying they had no respect for a U.S. Supreme Court decision handed down earlier this week, which vacated the corruption conviction of a former governor of Virginia.
When you read the opinion and then when you read the indictment, I suspect that you will be as convinced as I am and as convinced as everybody else who has seen this case. This is a crap piece of case.
In the Virginia case, the Supreme Court ruled that the definition of corruption while conducting, quote, official acts could cover almost any action a public official takes, so it was unconstitutional. Sullivan's attorney Santolo says his client was just meeting with a constituent. The producer of the music festival, we now know, was Boston Calling.
There will be evidence in this case that one of the victims who will testify that they do not believe they were threatened or coerced or pressure put on.
How worried should the mayor of Boston be?
I don't represent the mayor of Boston. No. Justice.
Do you believe this goes all the way to the mayor's office?
No.
As for Mayor Marty Walsh, he insists there's no corrupt City Hall.
If these allegations are true, simply really disheartening and concerns me.
The mayor says he has offered to cooperate with the federal prosecutors, but won't comment on the ongoing investigation or whether he has testified before the grand jury. Walsh did say regarding the permitting process, quote, we don't encourage people to use union labor. The topic should never come up. Before joining the Walsh administration, Governmental Affairs Chief Timothy Sullivan had been the lobbyist for Massachusetts AFL-CIO. And before he ran for mayor, Walsh served as head of Boston Building Trades, an umbrella group representing laborers, electricians, and Teamsters in the city.
I hold everyone to a high standard of integrity. We have ethics training coming for all department heads in the city of Boston, all cabinet members of the city of Boston, and we've brought in an outside counsel to look at and see these allegations and what's going on.
Federal prosecutors wouldn't comment about their case. Timothy Sullivan is scheduled to appear in court July 12th to enter his plea. Both he and Kenneth Brissett are on paid leave for the duration of their criminal cases. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Bruce Gellerman at Boston Federal Court.
For a closer look at the ethics concerns facing Mayor Walsh, we turn this morning to UMass Boston political science professor Mo Cunningham. Good morning, Professor, and thanks for speaking to Morning Edition.
Pleasure to be with you, Bob.
So we've just heard the mayor say he'll hold everyone in city government to a high standard of integrity, but he now has two top aides facing federal corruption charges. How big a blemish is this for the administration?
Well, I think it's a serious blow in the respect that, you know, Marty Walsh, is his closest political identity is that of a labor person, and the problems we're having right now emanate from labor figures in his administration. So it is a serious blow. He's going to have to hold people accountable and go deep to find problems before they occur.
He's distancing himself from these two individuals. He's asking outside lawyers to evaluate city practices, and he's instituting ethics training for department heads. Is that enough?
Well, I think he's probably going to have to go further and look at the administration, what kind of help he needs beyond that in terms of bringing in some professional folks. Not a huge shakeup, but maybe a different mix than what he has right now. He hasn't been a manager in politics. He's been at this for 2.5 years. It's not a long time. There are wise heads there. And at the same time, you want young people there who can help with the changing circumstances of social media and so forth. So I think he needs the right mix in government right now.
So you're saying he needs to bring in some new blood to the administration and blood not connected to organized labor?
Yeah, I think so. I think he needs some tough managers. These people, we understand that the mayor is a loyal guy, but these people are supposed to be loyal, and they really have not served him well. I think somebody needs to come in with a fresh look and uproot that sort of thing.
Does all of this make conducting city business more difficult for Mayor Walsh and all the people who represent him out there in the city of Boston and dealing with businesses, especially with business people in Boston?
Oh, sure. I think there are doubts in their mind about how they'll be treated. It's a huge distraction for government. I mean, it's a very encompassing. You have to introduce a lot of time spent with lawyers that people don't want to spend in the administration. It can be very disruptive. And now it's his job to keep his administration focused while all this is going on.
The mayor has obviously had some setbacks in recent months. The collapse of the Grand Prix race that was to take place this coming Labor Day weekend on the Boston Seaport that the mayor favored. The concern about the racial climate at Boston Latin School and other city schools. And now this. What sort of reflection is that in the big picture, do you think, in the public's mind on the mayor?
Well, I think the public very badly wants Marty Walsh to succeed. The public likes Marty Walsh. His other identity, as well as being a labor figure, is that he's a decent, hardworking, honest guy with the best interests of the city at heart. Now, that having been said, there have to be some changes in the administration to carry out that vision.
So what does the mayor himself do to cast himself in a different light, if he needs to?
Well, I think I think about Ronald Reagan's second administration. The first one was successful. The second one, he had virtually the same people, but in different jobs. It was the wrong kind of mix. I think Walsh has to take the control of this and bring in one or two people, maybe somebody who's quite senior with experience in managing large government organizations, and turn to that person and rely on that person, and not simply the insiders or the close Walsh loyalists that he's had with him so far.
Mo Cunningham is a professor of political science at UMass Boston. Thanks a lot for being with us, Professor.
Very welcome, Bob.